Advent. Can you believe that? Somebody looking forward to Advent just because they know they're going to get a calendar. So over the past five talks, we've been journeying with Joseph and his life, his dreams, the betrayal, the years of waiting, the faithful service, even when he found himself in circumstances and situations that he wasn't planned for. And then his readiness for opportunity when that came, and he stepped in when that opportunity was there for him. And last week we looked at some of the healing that takes place and that that moment of him encountering his brothers for the first time. And that was the first time since his brothers had sold him into slavery and they'd seen him be taken off into Egypt. So it was a really significant moment. And what we see at the end of chapter 42 is that famine has spread across the region. And Jacob has sent his sons to Egypt. And he's saying, we need food. Egypt has got this whole system in place because of Joseph and the position that he has. And so Jacob sends his sons off to Egypt to get the food. But he keeps Benjamin at home. He keeps Benjamin back, because he's fearful that Benjamin is going to be in danger, that Benjamin is going to get hurt. And so he keeps him back. And Joseph sees these brothers coming before them and he recognizes them, but he keeps himself and his identity a secret. And so the brothers don't know who he is. And so what we start seeing to take place is this set of circumstances start to take place where Joseph then says to his brothers, he accuses them of being spies. And he says, you need to go and you need to bring your younger brother that you told me about, because they told him that he'd got another brother. So you go and get that younger brother, come back and prove to me that you're not spies coming from Cana to try and disrupt and be disloyal to us. So I will keep Simeon in prison, Joseph is saying, and you other brothers can go back and then return with Benjamin. On their way back, they lodge somewhere and they open their sacks of grain and realize that the silver that they'd used to buy the grain has been put back in the top of the sacks. And they are frightened because they're going like, hang on a minute, we paid for the grain, but the money is back here. They're going to think we've stolen it. And so they are frightened for their lives. And so they go back to their father. They explain all of this. And Jacob is really distressed. He's really upset about the whole set of circumstances, because basically they're saying, we need to go back to get more food, but we've got to take Benjamin. We can't go back without Benjamin. And the father doesn't want to let Benjamin go. So in Genesis 43, the famine starts to worsen and Jacob finally agrees to let Benjamin go. But only after one of the other brothers, Judah, has pledged his life and said, we will keep Benjamin safe. If not, on my head be it. And so they take extra money with them, the money that they found in their sacks, plus more money to buy more grain, desperately trying to show that they are not cheating the system, that they're not spies. And so they go and they arrive in Egypt, and Joseph sees the brothers coming before them, and he sees Benjamin, and he instructs his stewards. He says to the servants of his house, go and greet them, go and say hello to them. And what I want you to do is I want you to bring them to my house and we're going to eat together. And so that's where we find ourselves as we go into Genesis 43. And we're going to start in verse 19. So if you've got a Bible, that's where we're going to be. It's on the screen. So we're going to read this together. Genesis 43. So the brothers have just arrived. Joseph has told the steward to go and arrange for them to go to the house. And it's quite a tense moment because the brothers fear that they're being trapped. They think that the brothers are saying, all these people think that we're spies. They think we're trying to trick the system. And now we're being invited to Joseph's house for dinner. They don't know it's Joseph. To this man's house for dinner. What on earth is going on? So let's look at what's going on. So verse 19. As they approach, Joseph's steward spoke to him in the doorway of the house. They said, my lord, this is the brothers. My lord, we really did come down here the first time only to buy food. They're trying to defend themselves. When we came to the place where we lodged for the night and opened our bags of grain, each one's silver was in the top of his bag. It was full. It was the full amount of our silver, and we have brought it back with us. We're trying to be honest. Look, we found this silver. We don't know where it's come from, but we're bringing it back. We have brought additional silver with us to buy food. We don't know who put our silver in the bags. When the steward said to them, may you be well, don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father must have put the treasure in your bags. I received your silver. Hang on a minute. So the silver in our sacks isn't the silver that paid for the grain, because you've had that. See, what was happening in this moment is Joseph was making sure that his family had the grain and they didn't actually have to pay for it. So the silver in their bags isn't a trap. It's an act of generosity. Let's see what starts to play out. Then he brought Simeon out to them. The steward brought the men into Joseph's home, gave them water to wash their feet, and got feed for their donkeys. Since the men had heard that they were going for a meal there, they prepared their gift for Joseph's arrival at noon. When Joseph came home, they brought him the gift they had carried into his house, and they bowed to the ground before him. He asked if they were well, and he said, "How is your elderly father that you told me about? Is he still alive?" They answered, "Your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive." And they knelt low and paid homage to him. When he looked up and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. So remember, the others are all half-brothers. This is his full brother. Same mother, same father. Jacob's true love, Rachel. He asked, "Is this your youngest brother that you told me about?" As if he doesn't know. Then he said, "May God be gracious to you, my son." Now watch this, verse 30. Joseph hurried out because he was overcome with emotion for his brother, and he was about to weep. He went to the inner room and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, regaining his composure, and he said, "Serve the meal." They served him by himself, his brothers by themselves, and the Egyptians who were eating with them by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews since it was detestable to them. They were seated before him in order by age. This is very structured. The firstborn and then the youngest. The men looked at each other in astonishment. They're like, maybe this isn't a trap. What on earth is going on here? Portions were served to them from Joseph's table. Listen to this. Remember this. And Benjamin's portions were 5 times larger than anybody else's. We'll see what's going on there. They drank and became drunk with Joseph. Not all of their actions were perfect. But I love how honest the Bible is. And there is a moment. This moment is charged with emotion. And we see a release of emotion here, actually, that they're not controlling themselves. And there's just this release of tension. And Joseph has every reason in this moment to seek revenge. To get back at his brothers for what they'd done. They'd planned to kill him. And that led to 13 years of imprisonment and slavery. 22 years since that moment happened. But something else is going on here. We're starting to see that Joseph is choosing grace over revenge. He's choosing forgiveness over bitterness. He's choosing reconciliation instead of retaliation. If you want a title for today's message, then it's this: Grace is Greater Than Revenge. Great. And I've got a little soundtrack just to do that as well. I've got a ping from somewhere. Grace is greater than revenge. But before we dive into the message, today we've acknowledged Remembrance Sunday. And I put a little video together of a story that happens at the end of World War II. And I think it just helps to illustrate what we're going to explore a little bit this morning. So let's just cast our eyes to the screen and we're going to watch this video
together. In the final months of World War II, a young American fighter pilot named Charlie Brown, yes, that was his real name, was on his first combat mission over Germany. His B-17 bomber had been ripped apart by German anti-aircraft fire. Half his crew were wounded. The tail of the plane was shredded. It could barely stay in the air. As they struggled to limp back towards England, a German fighter pilot named Franz Stigler spotted them from above. He took off, ready to finish the job. A crippled bomber was an easy kill. But as Franz pulled alongside, he saw something that stopped him cold. The tail gunner was slumped over, wounded. The fuselage was torn open. The crew inside were desperately trying to save each other's lives. Franz had been trained to be a killer, but he was also raised with honor. He would later say, "I couldn't shoot. It would have been like shooting a man in a parachute." So instead of pulling the trigger, Franz made a radical choice. He signaled to Charlie to keep flying. And in a stunning act of redemption and mercy, he escorted the bomber out of German airspace, protecting his enemy from other German fighters. When they reached the sea, Franz saluted Charlie and they turned back home. Charlie never forgot this act of mercy. For decades, he wondered why a German pilot saved him that day. In 1990, he finally found Franz. When they met, the two men, once enemies, embraced as brothers. They spent the rest of their lives as close friends, calling each other family. Charlie later said, "He could have ended my life that day, but instead, he gave it back to me."
What a powerful story. That grace is greater than revenge. Both of these men, Charlie Brown and Franz Stiegler, had been told that each other were enemies. But something else is happening here, because this isn't the actions of enemies or revenge or retaliation, but of grace. And the thing is with grace is that grace doesn't ignore the pain. Grace doesn't deny the pain. This moment with these two men in their planes didn't deny that the war was happening. You could see the evidence of the war as he flew past and saw the destroyed bomber. The evidence of war was right there. You could see that they had seen the devastation and the loss of life, the propaganda, the hatred that poisoned nation against nation. They knew the reality of that. When Franz Stiegler chose to spare Charlie Brown and the crew of that plane, he wasn't pretending that the war wasn't happening. What he was doing was defying its logic. What he was doing was saying, "I'm going to choose grace because it's greater than revenge." And this story just shows us that grace doesn't ignore the injustice, but it does transcend it. It goes above it. And in a world that seeks revenge and retaliation, "You did this to me, I'm going to do that to you," whether it's subtle and passive or overt and aggressive, this act of mercy that we see, and what we see in something of the life of Joseph, says, "I refuse to let evil to determine who I'm going to become." It's not ignoring injustice, but it's rising above it, allowing grace to be greater than revenge. And so grace looks injustice in the eye, fully acknowledges the hurt, and then chooses a different way. And that different way is a path that breaks the cycle of retaliation, of tit for tat, of "I'll get you because you got me." And instead it points towards redemption and forgiveness. And that's something that I want to speak into this morning. The act of grace that breaks the cycle of revenge. And something we see in the life of Joseph, specifically around how he steps into forgiveness. And so we're going to explore this morning. My points this morning are going to be what forgiveness is, but also what we see in Joseph is what forgiveness is not. And so as we go into Genesis 43, it has been 22 years since Joseph has been betrayed by his brothers. He now stands as governor of Egypt. He is powerful. He is respected. What he says goes. He is a man of power. And here are the men that once threw him in a pit and then sold him off into slavery. And they're now bowing down before him. Do you remember the dream from earlier in the story? Now is the moment when Joseph can go, "Ha ha, it's me. Told you you'd bow down. Get into prison. How dare you do what you've done to me?" Retaliation is the easy choice in that moment. They're begging for food. But instead of striking back, Joseph restrains himself. And what we see in this moment is he makes a decision. And the first point I want to make this morning is this, that forgiveness is a choice, not an emotion. Forgiveness is a choice, it's not a feeling. So we see from the life of Joseph what forgiveness is, but also what it's not. It's a choice, not a feeling. Joseph's feelings are raw. As we read that, you can't help but see all of the emotion that's playing out. His emotions are actually all over the place. One minute he's being compassionate, the next moment he's weeping in private and he's trying to compose himself. Joseph is having a deeply human emotional experience right now as he confronts his brothers. But beneath it all, what we see is his heart is turning towards grace. If it wants to turn towards retaliation, he's choosing to turn it towards grace. He's making that choice. And that's what makes forgiveness such a powerful act of faith. Because forgiveness and grace chooses obedience instead of emotion. So oftentimes we'll feel one thing, but we have to choose a different thing. Genesis 43 shows Joseph taking steps towards forgiveness. And that isn't reconciliation. Everything's all okay. Let's just carry on. Reconciliation will start to come, and we'll explore that in a few moments. But this is where the choice to forgive begins. And it's when Joseph opens the door to the possibility of grace. How? By opening the door to his home, his life, his heart. He's willing to let his brothers come a little bit closer through an act of hospitality and generosity. Some of the values that we have at OCC, that we're going to be a generous people, living lives that are open, inviting others into the spaces and places we find ourselves, shapes who we are. And Joseph invites his brothers for a meal in his home. He's showing kindness. He's planting seeds of reconciliation, even if that isn't what they're experiencing right now. He's doing that while the pain is still real, while he has to leave the room to weep and compose himself. It's what forgiveness looks like in real time. Often we can think forgiveness is just this decision that very faithful people can make and just be like, let's just do it. But actually we see that it's a challenge, it's a process, it's hard with a mix of emotions going on. It's not just this instant emotional release of whatever it is that's happened, but we're journeying with it, we're carrying with it the reality of what's happening, but not letting our hearts close off. And what we see are a series of small, faithful choices to act in love rather than retaliation. To think the best rather than assume the worst. Joseph shows us that forgiveness often starts long before we ever feel like we want to forgive. Before we feel that peace, before we feel like everything's all sorted now, we can forgive. Way before the words, I forgive you, were ever spoken, Joseph is making some choices. Not based on feelings of comfort or fairness, but a choice of obedience in who God is forming him to be. And he's also making choices that are going to reveal where his brothers are. And I think that's really significant as we journey on in this story. Because if the first thing is that forgiveness is a choice, it's not a feeling. The second thing that we see from Joseph's story is forgiveness is redeeming the past, not forgetting the past. Have you heard the phrase, forgive and forget? Anyone ever been, you don't need to show of hands, but been so hurt? How can I forget that? So if I can't forget it, can I really forgive them? I think Joseph's story speaks right into that. Genesis 43, 34. I read it earlier and asked us to remember it. Let me remind us. It says, portions were served to them from Joseph's table, and Benjamin's portion was 5 times larger than anybody else's. What on earth is going on here? How has that got anything to do with redeeming the past, not forgetting the past? Well, what's happening in this moment is Joseph is creating a scenario that is going to reveal the reality of his brother's heart. That's what's happening in this moment. Joseph isn't showing that forgiveness means forgetting everything that has happened, accepting it, or stepping back into that place of abuse or mistreatment. That isn't what Joseph is saying forgiveness looks like. That's not what the scriptures say forgiveness looks like. Benjamin is clearly the new favorite. His dad wouldn't let him go on the trip to Egypt in case he got hurt. Keep the favorite back. He's the son of the true love that Jacob always wanted, Rachel. It was Benjamin and Joseph. So what we see here is preferential treatment towards the new favorite. Joseph is giving him 5 times more than all the other brothers. Why? Joseph's saying, let's see how my brothers react when the favorite gets preferential treatment. Let's see how the brothers react when he gets more than them. Just like the first favorite got a coat of many colors and resulted in that favorite being thrown into a pit, pretending to be killed, and then told the dad that he was dead. Let's see what the brothers do now with this new favorite. See, in Genesis 43, Joseph is taking steps towards forgiveness. He's restrained his anger. He's shown kindness. He's fed his brother. That is steps towards forgiveness. It's releasing the desire for revenge and entrusting justice to God. But in Genesis 44, we start to see Joseph saying, I'm releasing forgiveness. Maybe not a one-time thing. I'm having to do it over and over again with this encounter. Every time I encounter and the wound gets reopened, I have to choose forgiveness and step towards. But now we start to see steps towards reconciliation. And when we step towards reconciliation, there's something we need. And what we need as we step towards reconciliation is truth. He needs to know, can the relationship with my brothers be safely restored? Have my brothers changed? Joseph knows that he's changed because the one previously that would have jumped in that moment and said, that's the dream I had, look, because that's how bold he was at the beginning of the story to tell his brothers without even really acknowledging how they might feel in response to that acknowledgement, to that announcement. He's now restraining himself. He knows he's changed, but have my brothers. Because it would be a really unwise thing to just go, do you know what, forgive and forget, let's go back into that. And he finds himself being mistreated and abused again by those that have previously already done that to him. Because forgiveness is about redeeming the past, not forgetting the past. So Joseph isn't being manipulative or cruel, he's being wise. He's checking whether the people that once betrayed him are capable of living differently. And what we see in Genesis 44, verse 1, says, then he commanded the steward of the house, this is Joseph, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Do you recognize this? It's already happened before. This is exactly what Joseph's done, but it was without Benjamin. So now he's got Benjamin there. He's created a scenario where Benjamin has to be there, the new favorite. Let's try and see what happens. And put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with the money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him. Joseph creates a scenario that's revealing the reality of his brothers' hearts. So his brothers leave. They don't know that they've got money back in their sacks again, but they certainly don't know that the youngest favorite son has now got a silver cup as well, something precious from Joseph's house. There is no doubt where that cup has come from. And as the brothers leave, Joseph sends his servants to chase after them, to hunt them down again. And when they find them, they accuse them of stealing from their master's house. And the brothers are like, there's absolutely no way we've stolen. We've shown you last time that we're faithful and we're not going to have done that. And they accuse them and say, there's been a silver cup taken from our master's house. It's like, we are innocent. So innocent, look, we will stand before you and we will open all of our sacks of grain. And if even one of us has got a fraction of whatever you're saying we've got, then you can take them and they can be your slave. And the reality is they've probably been put to death. And so the brothers all line up, youngest to oldest. The servants start to look in their sacks and they see the silver in each sack. And they get to Benjamin's and they see the silver cup. Let's see what happens. Genesis 44, 11. Each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground and each man opened his sack and he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes because they knew the reality of what this meant. But watch this. Every man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. They've gone with Benjamin. If Joseph is going, how are my brothers going to respond when the youngest favorite son is sent back to Egypt to be a slave, maybe to even lose his life? Are they going to behave the same way they did when I was the favorite and I got sent to Egypt? When there were selfish patterns that told them, do you know what? Let's make some money off this. Let's go and tell dad that he's been murdered. Are they going to be loyal to Benjamin or are they going to disown him? Are they going to go back to dad and say, Benjamin was killed. Sorry, nothing we could do about it. How are they going to behave? Will they be driven by jealousy and self-interest, or will they choose the path of self-sacrifice and loyalty? See, Joseph isn't acting out of malice. He's creating space for his brothers' hearts to be revealed. Because forgiveness isn't redeeming the past. Sorry, it is redeeming the past. It's not forgetting the past. See, the brothers then are brought before Joseph. And there's little they can do to prove their innocence. The cup is there. They could say they didn't take it, but it's there in the sack for all to see. They appeal to Joseph. And then there's this amazing act of self-sacrifice where Judah, who had previously promised their father, my life, if anything happens to Benjamin, my life, it's on my head. Judah stands forward and he offers his life in response and in place of Benjamin. And in Genesis 44, 33, we see Judah plead, Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy. Take me instead of him as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. Joseph shows us that forgiveness is a choice, not a feeling. He is not acting on impulse. He is not rushing past the pain. He is choosing intentional grace. And at the same time, we see that forgiveness redeems the past. It doesn't erase the past. He knows the betrayal and the reality of it, but he's transforming it into a pathway for reconciliation, giving the brothers the space to show their hearts have changed. Because true forgiveness rises above the hurt and turns injustice into reconciliation. And that's what we start to see in this moment. And my third and final point is this. Forgiveness is freeing for the forgiver, not just the offender. It's a powerful thing that happens in forgiveness that releases the one who is doing the forgiving as well as releasing the one who is offended. Let's see that play out. Genesis 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and he wept aloud. There is a release. All the people heard it. The Egyptians heard it. The household of Pharaoh heard it. He is wailing. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Joseph has revealed himself, and he's not revealed himself with anger, but with tears and grace, because he knows that the reality of his brothers' hearts has changed. This is a safe place to start to see reconciliation formed. He doesn't confront his brothers with bitterness or a desire for revenge. Instead, he now opens his heart fully, allowing himself to grieve and to weep, and to finally release the years of pain that he's been carrying. Because forgiveness liberates the forgiver as much as it liberates the forgiven. For 22 years, Joseph has carried the weight of betrayal, of injustice, of loss. And forgiveness in this moment that we see from Joseph does not deny all of that. It releases its power over him as he chooses grace, because it's greater than revenge. And what happens in this moment is Joseph is no longer defined by what his brothers did to him. He's defined by his choice to say, "Let's reconcile." Joseph could have held on to anger. He could have plotted revenge. He's the most powerful man in Egypt. He could have let resentment harden his heart. But instead, by forgiving, he experiences freedom. Emotionally, spiritually, he is free. And verse 14, see, he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him. Isn't that powerful? His brothers talked with him. There's the moment of reconciliation. See, true forgiveness breaks the chains on both sides. It releases the wounded from the chains of anger, and it releases the offender from the chains of revenge. There's a freedom that comes. And on the other side of broken relationships is an invitation to deeper relationship. Is it easy? No, I think Joseph shows us it's anything but easy. And in this amazingly moving moment, reconciliation takes place. But this is the thing with reconciliation. It requires a change of heart and a mutual willingness for the relationship to be restored. Forgiveness requires one heart. Reconciliation requires two hearts. In fact, in this story, it required a lot more hearts than that. Sometimes reconciliation isn't possible. Maybe the other person remains unchanged. Maybe the other person is absent. Maybe they're no longer with us. And reconciliation is just not possible. But forgiveness is always a choice that is independent of reconciliation and is independent of the other person's response. And even when reconciliation isn't possible, we can practice forgiveness moment by moment by moment, because it isn't a one-time thing. It's not, "I've forgiven them, woohoo!" It's a daily choice. Daily choice, a daily choice to continually release the resentment and let grace start to flood our hearts and the situation. How? By praying for the person, praying God's grace over them, by trusting God, letting go of that desire to get even. Jesus is the ultimate example of this, who, as he's hanging on a cross, says, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." He chooses mercy over revenge, love over hatred, redemption over retaliation. He doesn't ignore the pain. They've done it. They don't know they've done it, but they've definitely done something. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. There's pain. There's brokenness. But in that moment, Jesus chooses to forgive, even though those people that were crucifying weren't ready for reconciliation, weren't ready to respond. But Jesus made way for that, bearing injustice, opening the way for reconciliation and healing. I wonder, band, do you want to come up? We're going to close in a few moments. And we're going to give some space. Got a couple of minutes before we draw things to a close. Joseph's story shows us that forgiveness is a choice, not a feeling. It redeems the past, doesn't erase the past. And it's as freeing for the forgiver, not just the offender. But at the same time, we acknowledge that forgiveness and choosing grace over revenge is a journey for many of us. Some of us are still on that path and maybe still wrestling with pain and anger. Maybe it's not all as neat as it seems to be in Joseph's story. I'm not sure it's maybe as neat as we may think it is, even in Joseph's story. Because it doesn't dismiss the difficulty in the process. Instead, it reminds us that even small steps towards mercy are acts of grace in motion. Small steps. And like Franz Stiegler sparing Charlie Brown and his crew in the midst of war, forgiveness doesn't ignore the injustice, but it rises above it. It chooses that grace is greater than revenge. And even in the smallest steps towards forgiveness, God can open a door and can work in ways that only he can, because there's something about forgiveness that isn't just natural, it's supernatural. It lets God work into circumstances and situations. Amen.